Om Vigyanatimarandasya. Jnananjana Shalakaya. Chakshurunmilitamena. Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vansha Kalpa Turubhyascha Vipashandu Bhayevicha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Greetings from the USA. Greetings from the Sun Falls. Missed you all. Very happy to be back. This class has been going on pretty steadily twice a week for about, I don't know, it must be, Ruthie can check it out eventually, but it must be in its third or fourth year. And we've managed to, without fail, maybe very rarely miss something. And I believe the steadiness of the class, it kind of creates the habit that it's there. So I'm praying we haven't lost too much of our audience, but it was unavoidable. I really, even where I was, tried to get on, but in Moscow, you know, that wasn't possible for a day or something. And then I couldn't get on at all in Croatia. I was on a kirtan retreat with Satchinanda. There was some possible connection on the island, but I just didn't have the mechanics or whatever it is to do that. But now I'm here for the rest of the summer, and I don't see any reason why I should miss any of the classes. But I'm a little bit out of practice. So today I'll just speak about some of the things I've done and some of the classes I've given in Yugoslavia. It was really a very, very wonderful time. And I know that Burijan Prabhu, he once said a good class is where you learn one new thing. I don't know if he... I don't know if he was just commenting on the quality of classes that he had to listen to, but I was just taking notes all the time. Satchinanda's classes were very, very enlivening, very, very well prepared. And it was really an idyllic setting for a retreat. Croatia. There's 5,000 islands right off the coast, like very close to the coast. And we went to one small island that was only about an hour drive. They have regular boats that go out to the island from the different places. And it was something like I'd never seen before. I mean, the weather was so ideal. We had a place that was a vegetarian retreat center, and the only retreat center on that island. It was surrounded on water by two sides of where we were. And crystal clear, the water, very beautiful, and just a very, very wonderful time to be that level of absorption. In one sense, I was quite a relief also to be... away from technology have kind of like a media fast. I didn't have any use of the internet there at all. I did not die. Didn't have a cell phone. So it's a very simple, blissful life, and it was just really wonderfully organized and wonderfully done. And I also gave presentations, although Satchinananda Swami was the main facilitator, and I was just trying to fit into his program. But I did give two classes on why kirtan gives the most bliss and elaborated on that theme. I gave a lecture on gratitude and kirtan. And I gave a lecture, which I'll speak a little bit today, on kirtan and the Bhagavatam. It was really just super nice, idyllic. I brought a Akinchana Krishna and his kirtan associate, Sugosh, and that was wonderful. I mean, and kirtans were incredible, and just the whole mood was great. And I was also then, after that, in Zagreb for four or five days after the retreat. And I think in those countries also, kind of easier to meet the real established people of the country. I mean, America is just so vast and really nice. And I one lady from the National Theater was at the retreat, and she continued to come to my classes. And then the director of the National Theater, who very attracted to Krishna Conscious, especially the Leela of Krishna Conscious, because he's attracted, they came to see me, and it was just a very, very nice thing. And I think it's definitely a place which I will go back to. And I recommend any of you, if you'd really like a very spiritually uplifting and beautiful retreat. It's just the air flight. They don't charge much to the people for the staying there for a week at all. I mean, I think it charged 200 or 250 euros for a week with all facilities. So they try to make it affordable to the people that are there. Give me time. I'm going to get in the groove again. Went to the opening of a yoga studio called Yoga Maya in Chelsea, in New York, which is the director is a lady who was sent to me in Vrindavan, and I helped guide her pilgrimage for 2 weeks. It's absolutely stunning, stunning. I'm not sure there's a yoga center in New York that's as beautiful and well planned out as this. And it's very Krishna oriented. The director called me up and was just so appreciative and really, really felt that the reason why the thing was so wonderful is the presence of so many devotees that were there at the opening. And, of course, including Gauravani and Achyuta and Ananta and Janavi and that kirtan group. And it was almost historic spiritually. You know, Krishna consciousness, I know probably when's the last. It was like what a Sunday feast should be. 150 new people chanting and dancing like anything, and incredible prasadam, and people just taking all the prasadam prepared by the Bhakti Cafe. And it's really nice. And I am according to the director, announced to everyone that I'm the mentor of that place, and I will be having regular satsang programs there, which should be very, very well attended because it's so well promoted by the people who are the directors. So on July 18th at 6 p.m., for 2 hours, I'll give my karma psychology presentation there. If you want to look up on the web, it's Yoga Maya New York, NEWYORK, one word, .com. And you can get the details there. I've been to so many Sunday functions, and if one or two new people come, it's your three or five, but to speak of 10, but 150 just to hear kirtan and take prasadam and where the devotees and the people who are the practitioners of Krishna consciousness, of bhakti, are so highly revered. Even on the program for the grand opening party, it says she's thanking everyone, and she says, Dhanadhar Swami for being a massively bright light and guide, Kastubha Das for his wisdom and advice, whatever we need spiritually, all devotees everywhere, all yogis everywhere, all kirtaniers everywhere, all bhaktas everywhere, past, present, and future. So quite a wonderful. And seeing those young people up there, Gauravani and Antachuta, and the power and they have by the conviction of their bhakti and their surrender to Guru Parampara, and see the influence they have. And Kasuba just made the point to me. He said, this is Prabhupada's glory. Which spiritual tradition in the modern Western world has that legacy by Prabhupada's vision, legacy of another generation? So that was wonderful. So let me just talk. One of the presentations I gave was Satchinanda Swami really wanted me to give a presentation on kirtan in the Bhagavatam. And of course, the Bhagavatam is kirtan because Sukadeva Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam. He's the exemplar for kirtan. And how did he perform that kirtan? He glorified Krishna. And that's kirtan. The essence of life is our eternal relationship with Krishna. One second. I'll be right back. Excuse me, I just there's a new yoga teacher teaching upstairs in the studio. And I had to tell him very politely to lower the kirtan. But I'm always in the role of Chankazi, but he's a nice man. Yeah, when I'm here, they'll just have to be quiet with that kirtan because it takes concentration for my class. In fact, I'm going to have to tell them, no, they can't start kirtan until 10 o'clock till I'm finished. It's just a disturbance, and I was here first. Still too loud, but anyway, I can't stop it now. We have an eternal relationship with Krishna, and that when that's expressed, that's called bhava. When you express, when you're, the expression of your soul is manifest, that's called bhava. And that's called bhava. And that's called bhava. And bhava expressed through bhava expressed either through the discipline of music is called kirtan, or bhava expressed through the discipline of drama or poetry is called kirtan. So the Bhagavatam is kirtan. That's no doubt. But the essence of the Bhagavatam is not only kirtan, it's actually non-kirtan. If the message of the Bhagavatam, if there's two things, the Bhagavatam obviously is kirtan itself, there's also a message of the Bhagavatam. And the message of the Bhagavatam is kirtan. Of course, there's different aspects of philosophy which are contained. There's Sambandha. Sambandha is that reality, metaphysics, which is Krishna, Krishna's energies, and which is Krishna and Krishna's energies. That music is disturbing me, but I can't go up there again. But after the class, I'll definitely have to wait here and just tell them that. I give class between 9 and 10, and it has to be a very, 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 very low and very, very soft type of music, at least until 10 o'clock. Otherwise, there's subtleties of thoughts, and I really need quiet sometimes to get into that groove. And to can't have any external distraction. This is really, really subtle points here. Lord Chaitanya, his instructions from his spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya, his instructions from his spiritual master, I'm a little bit, it's just that kirtan, you may not hear it, but I can hear it, and anyway, let me get back to the main text. You know me, whatever I feel, I'm going to say. Anyway, in terms of hermeneutics, the way to really determine the object of kirtan is of course, God. Because bhava expressed, bhava devotion means it must be an object of bhava or devotion. And kirtan is when the object of devotion is God. Therefore, the Bhagavatam also establishes the object of kirtan, which is Krishna, and in establishing the object of kirtan, that's also kirtan. When you're saying who your object of love is and you're expressing it, that's also kirtan. But to actually determine it, because there's so many, why there's so many subjects in the Bhagavatam, that in every chapter there's different subjects, there's 10 subject matters in the Bhagavatam. That's to prepare us for the objective of the Bhagavatam. And the objective of the Bhagavatam is very clear. The objective of Bhagavatam is to bring you to a certain level of absorption. That's the objective of any type of yoga. Objective of any type of yoga is to create a intense focus or control of the mind that results in an intense focus of the mind that comes to the level where that object of focus is so much pervading the consciousness that one is not even cognizant of anything outside that. That's samadhi. In before samadhi and jhana, you're fully absorbed, but there's cognizance that there's something outside. When you attain full absorption, and in the process of bhakti, that absorption is prema. And the definition of prema, prema pumartam mahan, that is the value, that is the goal, that is the objective. And the what prema is when the consciousness is totally pervaded with the object of your devotion to such an extent that there's no other thought within the consciousness. And that creates a certain obliviousness to the world. That's the difference between dhyana. Dhyana, you're absorbed, you're really deep, but there's some cognizance that there's something outside. So that's the goal. The goal is to bring you in a state of pure awareness without any distraction. Yoga, chitta, vritti, nirodha. Nirodha, destroying all the other conceptions or thoughts and the consciousness. But in the Bhagavatam, it says, samyak, completely, pranayate malay, without malay, without dirt, without distraction, nothing external to the nature of the soul in that type of meditation. So in Lord Chaitanya was being instructed by Ishvara Puri, because Lord Chaitanya had a doubt whether his chanting of the holy name, which brought him to this state of obliviousness to his external environment, to the extent that he was laughing, crying, and in an emotional state that couldn't be controlled. He brought it to the lotus feet of his guru. You know, this is what's happening to me when I'm following your instructions. Is this okay? And Ishvara Puri told him several things, including that by this process you will see the lotus feet of Krishna, and there's no other way to do it. Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo, Nisteva, Nisteva, Gatir, Anyata, Gatir, Anyata. There is no other path for this. And then he said a very startling thing to Lord Chaitanya. He said, now I'm going to tell you the essence of the Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya was saying, wow. And he was really like, not what he was like, listening, the essence of the Bhagavatam. And then he quoted this verse I quoted quite often, Evam Vata. Supriyanama Kritya, Chitanuraga, Chitanuraga, Anurag, this high devotional state, Jati, is born. This is the essence of the Bhagavatam. The essence of the Bhagavatam is to give birth to love of Godhead. That the faith of the soul, the faith of the soul is the nature of the soul. No, I should say this. Faith is the nature of the soul. Shraddha is the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is to love God. Our faith is to the extent that we are experiencing the soul. And when that experience is to the highest degree, that's prema. With full faith is prema. Up until prema, up until we cut the button, there's always a doubt. Is it true? Can I attain it? So he says, Chitanuraga, it gives birth to the goal, this anurag. What? Evam vrita supriyanama kritya. Swanama kriya. Evam vrita swanama. Evam vrita supriyanama kritya. Supriyanama of your swa, your own dear Lord. Krita. Evam vrita supriyanama kritya. By doing this, chanting the names of your Supreme Lord. But how do you chant the names of the Supreme Lord? Evam vrita, in this way. What is this way? Without any embarrassment, vilaja, without any consideration, asanga, without any attachment. It's a full absorption. And our normal considerations are dropped. We give our heart fully to this. That's the goal of the Bhagavatam. That's also the process of Bhagavatam. That's what Ishvara Puri says. And if you study and look in the Bhagavatam, that is the answer that's given to Maharaj Parikit's question, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What should he not do? Which is considered the most relevant question for every person, because everyone's facing this problem. This is our main problem. The main problem is we die. There can't be a greater problem than death. If you have material conception, there's no greater problem than death. There's no greater fault in the material existence. Then it will become non-existent. So naturally, an intelligent person wants to confront that problem. Satchinandana Swami spoke about that, and he made a very interesting point, that an intelligent person wants to cultivate those things which can stand in the face of death. He wants to cultivate those things which can stand in the face of death. And what are those things that can stand in the face of death? Ayur hariti vai punsa ujan astau chin. With the rising and the setting of the sun, the life of every man decreases, except that man who's doing kirtan. That man who is engaged in the activity of the soul. I had that realization so clearly when I was going through a very intense period of life where the world was moving so rapidly and antagonistically against the way I wanted the world to go. And that's what suffering is, when your attachments are frustrated. And it got so intense that I just took shelter in chanting the holy name. And then as I'm chanting the holy name, what I really understood, and I think I understood it deeply for the first time, that kirtan is the activity of the soul to glorify God. And therefore, it's the activity that's connected to who you are, the real self. And when you become attached to that activity, you become attached to the identity as the soul. And then you become fearless, because what you most treasure and what you most identify with cannot be taken from you. What you are doing is what will last. And I realize everything else is temporary. That type of understanding. So the first thing is, so he asked that question, what is the duty about to die? Man is not dead, what should he not do? It is answered within five verses. The peerless method of success for all, Harinam Anu Kirtanam. Harinam Anu Kirtanam. Nam Kirtan is the peerless method of success for all. And then when the Bhagavatam ends, the very, very last verse of the Bhagavatam, very, very last verse of the Bhagavatam says, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Panasanam Panamo Dukha Shamanash Tam Namami Harim. I offer respectful obeisance to Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy names destroys all sinful reactions. So this is the Abhideya. This is the essence of the Bhagavatam, is the essence of any spiritual process, is a practice to realize truth. A practice to not only realize truth, but a practice to experience truth. And the experience of truth is love, because we have a relationship with truth. But then after that verse, with the conclusion is given, many, many times in the Bhagavatam it says, Tasmat, therefore, Tasmat, therefore. The conclusion is always the same. And if you want to achieve perfection, you should chant, hear, worship, and remember Krishna. But he said something very nice. Certain rituals are necessary. And then it goes progressively, even to worship the universal form, just so that you get a theistic bent. And it describes meditation on the super soul, the worship of the demigods. If there are certain rituals, there are certain things, just like we come to spiritual life, and there's an objective. The most important thing is kirtan. The most important thing is to chant the holy name. But there are certain other things that you have to do to allow you to not only do it properly, but to do it continuously. So there are rituals, but those rituals and the things that are mentioned are connected to the goal. He says the essence of the Bhagavatam is to chant with sambandha, chant with relationship. Relationship means with Krishna. So you're going to chant with relationship with Krishna. You have to first understand your relationship with Krishna. Therefore, sambandha again, knowledge of relationship. Knowledge of relationship. Mainly, what is your relationship with this world, and who is God in relationship to this world, and who is God in relationship to you? What is God in relationship to this world? You have to understand that clearly. So that's presented. So the message of the Bhagavatam at the beginning and the end, the message is Nam Kirtan. And other things should give you the knowledge to how to do it properly with your relationship with Krishna. But because they're about Krishna, they're also Kirtan. Now, that's also consistent with how Jiva Goswami describes hearing the Bhagavatam. He describes that you hear the Bhagavatam in two ways. You hear the Bhagavatam in two ways. One, you hear it for instruction. You hear it for instruction. But those who are advanced don't need to be instructed. These verses say, chant the holy name. You don't have to go to tell Haridas Thakur. You don't have to give him a japa seminar. Not to him. Who whoever it is. I mean, you don't have to instruct someone who has full faith and knowledge in the subject you are instructing on. So the Bhagavatam is instruction, so it instructs you. This is Krishna. This is the method of realizing Krishna. And this is the result to do so. But one who has surrendered to Krishna, realized Krishna, and has full faith in the holy name, he doesn't need to be instructed. And his perception and view of the sacred, he'll read the same subject matters from the first canto to the 12th canto. But his perspective towards it will be in a different way. He will read it not to be instructed, but to relish. He'll read it to relish his eternal relationship with Krishna. Therefore, Jiva Goswami says there's rasa in the Bhagavatam, because that may give a hint that there's some place where Bhagavatam is not. Like there's a treasure in the ground, so it indicates in the ground there's some place where there's not that treasure. So he says you have to say the Bhagavatam is simply composed of rasa. He says every word is kirtan. Every word is a glorification of Krishna. And therefore, one is advanced, he'll be hearing it as the glories of his beloved Lord. And he'll be relishing it. When Bhurijan Prabhu asked his godbrother Radha Govinda, how do you prepare for the Bhagavatam? And Radha Govinda Swami says, I don't. I just relish. A very advanced person. He's just relishing. He's reading and loving Krishna. He's not reading it to become a scholar. He's not reading it to get instruction. Although he'll appreciate every verse. So the Bhagavatam is about kirtan. It is kirtan. It instructs on kirtan. And when you get to the 10th canto, then you understand that kirtan is the main ragatmaka activity of the residents of Vrindavan. What does ragatmaka means? Rag, it means it's the nature of the soul. Nature of the soul is rag. It's love or devotion. In perfection, we'll have that. So there's also two ways to do kirtan. And both of them in the Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam shows both the perfected souls and it shows the practitioners. So one practice of kirtan is you do kirtan in as a practitioner, which means you don't have love, but you chant for love. You don't have pure devotion, but you chant for. You don't have it, but you chant to get pure devotion. And one is your chanting is a product of pure devotion. It's an expression of pure devotion. So when you become perfect, the gopis don't have to sit down and chant their rounds. But they're chanting because they love Krishna, and that's the main expression of love. You can gauge your level of bhakti by the degree that you're attracted to hearing, chanting and hearing about Krishna. There's absolutely no difference in that correlation. So in the Bhagavatam, and that's what we get. If you look at the life of the residents of Vrindavan, no matter what relationship they're in, what they're doing, is glorifying Krishna. Just like Mother Yasoda. Sukadev speaks. He's speaking that when Mother Yasoda saw all the maidservants, engaged in other household affairs, and she personally began to churn the yogurt to make butter. And while churning, what happened? While churning, she began to do kirtan. She composed kirtan, and then she would sing that kirtan. Gitani, Patala, Charitani, Dadhi, and Mante. While churning the yogurt, she began the Gita, Gitani, the songs. And she chanted those songs, and she enjoyed it. She enjoyed chanting those songs. This is what the residents of Vrindavan do. They do kirtan. Because it's the main expression of love. Every word is a dance, and every step, every word is a song, every step is a dance. That's a spiritual world. Most of our activities are just walking someplace and talking to someone. In the spiritual world, that is kirtan. The main activity is kirtan. Some of the asodas is doing kirtan. Prabhupada said, appears that Mother Yasoda did not want to forget Krishna, therefore she poeticized all of Krishna's activities, such as the killing of Putana, Gasa, Sakatasa, Chinavar. And while churning the butter, she sang about these activities in a poetic form. She did kirtan. So Mother Yasoda is always doing kirtan. And then we have the pastime of Kaliya, when the residents of Vrindavan came to the bank of the river and they saw Krishna wrapped in the coils of the Kaliya serpent. And what did Mother Yasoda, what Mother Yasoda think? That she wanted to go in the water. Her friends stopped it. But what did her friends do? Her friends began to chant the names of Krishna in relationship to him killing the demons to pacify, because he was, she saw he was in the coils of the serpent, and that he was for sure going to be finished. But they reminded her, Putana Gatana Koitaba Satana Chaya Dasarati Rama Bolo Hari Hari Mukunda Murari Rama Krishna Haya Griva. So it's kirtan. And then if you look at a day in the life of Krishna, I was explaining to the devotees there about the story of Krishna going to the forest when he attains the Poganda age, when he's just six. They give him the cows, and Krishna goes out to the forest. And what is he doing in the forest? Well, the image of Krishna is when he leaves for the forest. When Krishna leaves for the forest, the image is very clear. He desires to enjoy the pastimes. He sounds his flute, and he's surrounded by the cowherd boys who are doing kirtan. Nadibi. Vita, Gopai, Granadi, B, Srikyasha. They're chanting his glories. Srikyasha, his glories. So they're also doing kirtan. And then when they get to the forest and they're playing with Krishna, they're doing kirtan. That's described. It also describes how you do kirtan. They did it with deep love from the heart, and they did it appropriately. And if you get the image of Krishna when he coming back from the forest, and the gopis, they run to the edge of the forest despite the objections of their husbands. And then they see the padaduli, they see the dust of Vrindavan. And then they hear Krishna's flute, and then they hear the cowherd boys doing kirtan. So that's Ragatmaka kirtan. That's not a practice. That's a result of your devotion. It's not done to get devotion. Also, the gopis. Krishna is entering the forest. He plays his flute. The birds create a symphonic effect as Krishna blows his flute. A very, very beautiful symphonic effect. And there's kirtan. When Krishna is in the forest and the gopis are separated from Krishna, they're always, always chanting about Krishna. Always. So, Bhagavatam, I really want to work on this, but it's very, very clear that it's a text where the essence is kirtan. Okay, I'm going to stop there for today. I'm still, how do you put it? I traveled to Moscow, came back, then traveled there. I did pretty good. Hardly any jet lag at all, I have to say that. But this is the first time we're getting to settle down here. Are there anybody like to ask questions? Mooney, do you have any question, if you're there? Anybody like to ask a question?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
I don't know. How can have... Do you hear me okay, Marsh? There's a little background static.
I can hear you perfect.
Okay. I guess I apologize in advance. I feel like sometimes people have the same questions that come out in a variety of environments. And so if this is prior to you, I said sometimes I feel like people have one or two big questions that they're working with that come out in a variety of environments.
I don't mind. It always seems like it. It's okay.
But how do you negotiate that, Satchinandan Swami's sense that when you're wise, you invest in that which death cannot take away. I mean, that's one of the things that attracted me to, sadhana and to the ashram. But I feel like there's ways where, I don't know, it's very hard to understand exactly how to implement that. I think one of our great examples of maturity after the ashram is actually learning to slow down and be nice to people, even if there's no actual gain in it for me or for my religious community. I don't know if there's a future in that. So I'm just wondering, how do you internalize that deep teaching in a way that's, I don't know, makes sense?
Well, it seems that everyone has to have an objective. And the objective has to be eternal. Obviously the objective should be eternal. It seems obvious to me. That doesn't mean that part of attaining that objective is to satisfy one's desires. It doesn't mean to renounce the world, obviously. So the objective is eternal. And part of attaining that eternal objective is a type of sadhana where you do try to forget the world. It's a practice. Yeah, it's a practice where you do go to that platform. And obviously, the objective is not to stay, in a job for eternity. The objective is not to stay in with your family for eternity, But the objective is to live with Krishna eternally. That's the objective. So I think the mistake that people made is that when they hear that type of preaching about an eternal objective, it's just so natural to think that it's recommending the process of complete renunciation, which it's not. It's recommending a very practical process of dedication. And either dedication, because you do have these desires, and they can become purified by dedication, and it's the best way for you to remember Krishna by dedication, or you're so advanced in Krishna consciousness that everything is done purely. And everything is done really on the platform of the soul without anything for myself in a complete selfless manner. So I would just say it has to be an eternal objective, and we have to practice transcendence, and then we have to deal with our attachments for an objective, even if it is a spiritual objective, even if it means, you know, at least satisfying our desires.
Okay, so you know, that makes sense. So in other words, it's almost like a matter of keeping that compass pointed in the in the right direction, so you can adequately assess other things and judge them in the right way, and relate with them in the right way.
I think so. And yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just trying to understand. I mean, there's a way in which I think, like Saint Augustine or somebody talked about, what was it? Having like appropriate, what was the word? Like kind of like putting things in the appropriate order. And if you're going to do that, the order has to start with God. Anyway, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to think through, I think the way you just put it, your objective is eternal, and it doesn't necessarily mean you don't relate to the world, but it means that you have to see it in the lens of that, or something like that, through the lens of that. Anyway, I'm just trying to think through it.
Yeah, seeing in the lens of that is relating to it as an eternal soul, you know, and seeing it as God's energy, you know, which is also eternal, and using it. You know, it's like the thorn, right, in the foot. You take it out by another thorn. That example is already given, you know, or to cure a disease, you know, like a bad stomach caused by overabundance of milk products, by milk products, which is yogurt, which is a transformation of the same thing. So I think there's a lot of things indicating that, you know, while you're in the world, you use the world. And I think the difficulty, and I think it comes up again and again, is because people don't have balanced knowledge. They overextend their realizations. It's something like this. You're a hippie, and you know, you're engaged in a lot of illicit sex and a lot of intoxication, and it's making you miserable because it's degrading the mind into ignorance, even though you're in having some temporary enjoyment. The effect on the mind is, so then you come to, and you're depressed and you're in anxiety, and then you meet a guru, you meet a spiritual teacher, and they teach you eternal, and they extract you from those activities, and you get some relief by renunciation. But because you're not mature, and you don't have a balanced understanding of the nature of renunciation, you know, you start doing things like giving up things that you need in Krishna's service, which even includes certain core attachments in your samskaras in your consciousness that can best be removed by their appropriate and patient engagement in spiritual life. And then you start to view things like, if it's a patriarchal spiritual movement, you know, you start to mistreat the women who are the objects of attachment, you know, or, you know, you start to, you know, decry family life, you know, things like that. So it becomes imbalanced, you know, but whether it's pravritti marg or nivritti marg, the path is detachment. It's just like brahmachari life. There's two types of brahmacharis. One is attached, one is detached. The one is detached can appropriately remain brahmachari and become sannyas. And the one who has attachments enters into grihastha ashram. But their objective is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, their objective is to become detached.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's just, so I guess what it is that it's just it's just very difficult to, you know, to be balanced.
You said their objective is to become detached. Yeah. Isn't detaching also another way station? Isn't the objective to become attached to Krishna? I mean, obviously,
okay,
right.
But you enter the ashram to become detached from sex life, right?
Okay.
I mean,
that's the only reason?
What?
Is that the only reason? Is that the only reason?
It's the main reason.
I don't know. Okay.
The main reason is to fulfill your desires. No, because what is it? The Grihastha ashram gives license for sex life, right? Right?
Uh-huh.
Sexual life eventually means it has to become detached, right? In any process.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I sometimes think that the view I've had of all of this is kind of, I don't know. Like, when you read more Indian literature, it's really weird that most people were expected to become grihasthas because it was just their duty. It wasn't even like, there wasn't this idea that everyone should try to give up the world, and if you can't, and if you fail, then you can get married. That doesn't seem to be the actual picture of things. I'm just trying to understand. You know, that's the picture I inherited in the ashram, but I don't know if that's the only consideration. Did I lose your Marge or? Marge?
Mooney, can you hear me? Hi, Bo?
I can hear you.
Maharaj, you can hear.
Maharaj, are you still there? Somehow I lost the call.
We lost the call. All I'm just saying then, I don't believe we're disagreeing. So what do you feel is a person's on a spiritual path, he's a brahmachari.
Yeah. Right?
He enters the Grihastha ashram. What is the purpose of that?
Well, I think in Indian culture, you just did it because it was your duty. We have a certain story that we've heard that you aim as to be a brahmachari your whole life, but if it doesn't work out, you get married. I don't know if that's a traditional view.
Okay, whether you're a brahmachari or not, from a perspective, you may not know it, from the perspective of the culture, there's a purpose of everything. What is the purpose of that? In the greater scheme of things.
So the ultimate purpose of Dharma, what we would say, what? For enlightenment, your enlightenment and others' enlightenment, right?
Okay. All right, enlightenment. Liberation.
Yeah.
Right? And liberation,
sure.
Is what? It's definitely connected with detachment, isn't it?
Sure. I'm just, I think we do agree. I guess I confess I'm still working through the fact that I think I had a skewered idea of Indian culture for a long time that I'm trying to understand now. And I don't know. I don't know if the traditional picture is one where they say everyone's individual aim should be renunciation. And then
forget what they're telling them. But what is it? Forget what they tell him. What is it?
It's Dharma.
Everything connected to that. What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's performance of Dharma.
Dharma means your intrinsic nature. Dharma is your intrinsic nature, right? So it means activities that bring you to intrinsic nature. And that means muktir hitva yata rupam sarupena vitastita. Muktir hitva yata, you give up something and you embrace something else. What you embrace is your sarup. So I guess, you know, you can look at it in different ways, that the goal is love of Godhead, you know.
Yeah.
You know, bhakti is not renunciation, it's dedication. But this is, we're not talking about bhakti now, what we're talking about is vanashram, you know. We're not talking directly about bhakti, we're talking about vanashram, and yeah, and it's clear that, you know, it's bhakti is about dedication.
Mm-hmm.
What is the purpose of that, you know, social activity? You know, it seems to me that it's brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas, right? Brahmachari, vihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. It seems that the ashrams are a progressive realization of detachment.
I don't think we disagree either, Marj. I guess I'm wondering though if the right. I don't think it's the right picture that you. I just don't think it's historically appropriate, nor do I think it's even correct for sadhana to have a picture where you tell every single individual your goal is to aspire to be a renunciate right now. Now let's see if that works out. Let's say if it doesn't work out, you'll discover that by the time you're like 25 or 30. And then you should get married then simply because you have desires. I just confess to you, Marsh, that I think that way of approaching the whole thing is not only historically fallacious, but I think it just kind of screws up people's attitudes completely. And certainly it's not how it was done in classical India at all. And so
So you are agreeing that's on the overall scheme of things, that's how it works, and that's the objective.
What's the referent of that? You're saying that the goal is increasing detachment and
You're talking about a particular implementation about something, how things are presented, how things are viewed. You know what I'm saying? How things are promoted, and I'm talking about in the universal scheme of things, right? What's the actual purpose of this particular spiritual social principle? You know, what is it? Why is it there? How does it work? You may not want to tell people. It's maybe not really what people should be hearing. You know.
Well, I don't even know.
Another perspective, what actually is Von Ashram and what are the benefits of going through it, you know, in terms of its objective or enlightenment? Okay, anyway,
I think more or less like you said before, I think we have the same perspective, but there's a few things, the way in which you phrased it, where I don't think it's a matter of just presenting it to people in the way that makes them feel good. I just wonder about some of the deep implications it has. But anyway, I do think generally we agree, so I apologize if I created a smokescreen there with some of the concerns.
I just remembered that, you know, someone told me this there. It's like, you know, how movement shifts from, you know, overemphasizing renunciation to de-emphasizing renunciation. I just remember someone told me that in a meeting, whether or not a sannyasi would come to Alachua, right?
Yeah.
Someone got up really strongly and says, you know, we don't want those sannyasis coming here and preaching renunciation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly hope you don't think that's what I'm defending here. We'll take this offline.
Okay. We'll talk about it later. Anybody else like to say does anybody still want to say hello to me? Okay. Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Who's that?
Sulit and Hanan here.
Who?
Sulit and Hanan.
Oh, Hanan, good. Thank you, because you were on Wednesday at... I just was able to speak briefly. You have a question?
Yeah. Yes, Akasha? No. Just wanted to say Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you so much. Great. I'm so happy that you're on regularly. Great. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Gail?
Yeah, that's one of us. One of us is Gail.
Okay. Well, I heard you first, Gail.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that, you know, I'm always kind of happy when you get challenges to your sanghas.
Challenges when I get to what?
When you get challenges to your concentration.
When I get... You're always happy when I get challenges?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's when I... I usually hear, you know, valuable gems of realization.
Okay. Good, good. So we should do this more often, you know? Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Raj.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good, good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
Shyamarupa Das.
Who is it?
Shyamarupa.
Oh, hey, Shyamarupa. Great. You know, I'm coming to Boston. You know that on the 23rd. Did you get the message yet?
I heard something about it. Is there anything going on with the Arlington Center?
Yeah, there is. Check, you know,
okay.
The person who invited me, I think she knows. I think it's on the 23rd.
Okay.
I'm going to give us a seminar there. It'd be great to see you. And send me an email. Maybe we can just get together some other time when I'm there, you know? It'd be nice to touch base, really.
Yeah,
okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Gopa Kishor.
Hey, Gopa, Hare Krishna. Nice program there Friday night, huh?
Yeah, it was great. You're kind of like Govinda. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yesterday we had a program on the beach in Ocean Grove that Kulpa put together. On the beach, yeah.
How many people came to that?
There was a lot, maybe 60 or 70 people. It was nice.
Mostly devotees?
Mostly not devotees. Mostly like kind of yoga people.
Okay.
Tonight we're having a program at Asbury Park. Spiritual ecstasy.
That's before the program at Asbury Park.
Yeah, this was just like kicked on the Jersey Shore program last night.
Well, keep me posted. Let me know what's going on. If I'm in the area, then I can come.
Uh-huh.
It sounds great. That's great.
Okay.
That's really nice.
Okay.
Great. Okay, great. Wow. So much going on. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bol Maharaj.
Mother Indrani, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You know, it's 5 years today that Bhakti Tirtha Swami left his body.
Oh my God, that's mm-hmm. You should offer. I didn't know. It's his
turn of 50
today. Really.
The Vedic calendar date we're doing is July the 3rd. You know, work with the Tirtha date now?
Yeah.
But today is the actual date that we experienced who were there.
On the Western calendar?
Yes.
Okay.
It's July 3rd.
I thought it was at the beginning of June.
No, 27th June, Maharaj.
Really? Okay. Well, great. We can thank you so much. That'll be a nice remembrance for everybody today to remember his life and teachings.
Yeah.
I was just in Croatia where he had such a wonderful influence there.
Everywhere.
Yeah, so many people. But there'll be a function at Gita Nagari on the 3rd?
On the 3rd, yes.
Okay.
And as far as I know, most of us are doing the 3rd, but you still remember the actual date.
Okay.
Of course, his presence is still present.
Wonderful.
We'll
remember. Wow.
Yes.
Hard to believe that it was so many years ago, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
And
okay,
I welcome you back, Maharaj. It's nice hearing you and hearing your points that you make. And somehow I wanted to say something with your discussion with my favorite person there. I call his name right now. But the ultimate goal of all of this is love of God. I don't care. To me, whatever ashram you're in, it's about following what we've been given to reach the goal of love of God. And eventually escape this material energy and go back home. Maybe because at my age now, that's where my focus is. But anyway, that's what I felt like saying. Moni, is it Moni?
What's that?
Interesting hearing his questions every when he does. Where I am today.
That's where everyone should be.
Okay.
That's the purpose of everything. The purpose of everything is to attain love of Godhead.
Yes.
But certain things assist us in doing that.
Yes. Yes.
And some things assist us in doing that by dealing with our desires to help us come to that point. Whatever we do is to situate ourselves in the best way. Yeah, I would say that's a nice way to add things, that the real purpose of Von Ashram is to situate ourselves in the best way to remember God. I would say that's a fair way of looking at it. Thank you. Anybody else like to say?
I'm in the Von Ashram, so Vanaprast.
What's that?
I said I'm in Vanaprast now, so you know where my goal is, my aim is. I'm working at as Vanaprast. It's closer to getting out of here. But you help me when I hear your classes, though, with that love of God. You definitely help me each Sunday, Maharaj. And I thank you so much for your classes.
Okay, thank you, Mother Indrani.
My head is full.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. This is Chris in Pennsylvania.
Chris, I just got back. I was offline. I got some email. I'm thinking how to get down there, especially Mother Indrani said, I would like to visit sometime. I'm not sure when yet. I haven't really even got a chance to look at my rest of my calendar,
we'll definitely arrange something. Arrange something to get you down here.
Okay. Anyway, just speaking to you is encouraging me. It's just that I have some programs. I don't like to travel so much. So I just have to see, just how to get there and what the right time is. But definitely I'll come down. So is there a program on the 3rd for Bhakti Tirtha Swami and Gitanagari? Is that the idea?
Well, I haven't heard about that. The Harrisburg Rath Yatra is July 3rd, so I'm not sure what's going on with that.
That's July, the Harrisburg. You know anybody who's coming to that?
Bhakti Marg Swami is coming.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
All right, Chris. Thank you. Great. Well, it's so nice that the regulars are still on. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, Govardhan. Is that you? Okay. I've been off for a while, so it's good to come back and hear everybody. That's great. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
I have Shastra. I'll give you a call this morning. We'll do our Puri thing. Just to finalize, we should just talk about it anyway. I think it's all finalized, and anybody is welcome to come on that. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Okay, we can end. Vanchakopa, Turubhya, Shastra, Kripasindu, Devi, Shapatita.